Good morning to all of you. It's a blessing to be here. It's been a blessing to me to be here already. And I'm just somewhat overwhelmed, actually, with how the service has fit together and how it's pointed toward the same things that I want to share this, or had in mind to share this morning. So thank you for being here. Welcome to all you visitors and all you home folks too. So good to see so many of you here. For it seemed like all summer we struggled to have everybody here, and not everybody's here this morning either, but it's good to have all of you here that are. So I thought of when Murray was talking about the things that we struggled with and maybe gave us a bad week. One of my brothers put on our chat last night. He said, I just love this September weather that cools down to the low 90s at night, and the dust just hangs so nicely in the air. It's just kind of nice. Obviously, that was fairly sarcastic. But does that ruin our day when that happens, or how do we feel about that? For a message this morning, I'd like to, the title is Scars or Festering Wounds. And I thought we should look at maybe the definition of the two. A scar is a permanent mark left on the body after a wound has healed. So it's something that has happened, but it's healed. It leaves its mark, but it's healed. I actually wasn't quite sure what the meaning was of festering. I knew what I thought it meant, but I did look it up. And festering means contaminated by an infective agent such as bacteria. And this is something I want us to remember: worsening over time. So it's contaminated, it's infected, but it worsens over time. And so I'd like for us to remember that aspect of it as we go through the message here. You know, all of us face hurts, wounds, unfair treatment to some degree or another. And I really appreciated what Lauren shared this morning. Those things can become a burden to us. We can choose to hang on to that, or we can choose to let it go. One thing that I thought of along with that is, you know, oftentimes when we do face unfair treatment, no question, we do. But often when we say life is unfair, we are comparing with someone that has it nicer than us and not those that have less than us or have experienced much worse than us. But all of us face those things. All of us face wounds. And they come in many different ways. So many different ways. And I have a few stories I'd like to tell you this morning and maybe show some of those different ways, a couple of those different ways, and yet how profoundly they affect us if we don't work through them properly and take care of them properly. How we respond to those hurts is very important, because the way we respond affects not only our lives, our personal lives, but every relationship that we have, be it with people around us or be it with God. It affects that relationship, those relationships. You know, a number of years ago, it wasn't actually that many years ago, probably 4 or 5 years ago, this is a story that happened to me. I was we were out one evening after supper, and the children were, I think, if I remember right, just batting some balls around, and I was, if I remember correctly, Frieda and I were just standing out there watching, and I suddenly decided I was going to go after a ball or something. I don't remember exactly, but I made a fast move, not thinking about the fact that my footwear was not prepared for fast takeoff. And I just completely wiped out, just flat down. And yes, great was the fall thereof. But what happened was my one arm landed on a rock. And it didn't, excuse me, it didn't do very much. It broke skin just a little bit, and of course it felt like it was bruised too, falling on it that hard, but it really didn't do that much, not that we could see. And so I bandaged it up a little bit, and it healed up, I thought. It wasn't until a week or so later, a week or two, I can't remember exactly how long it was, suddenly my arm started really getting sore. And it was just, I looked at it, and you know, couldn't see anything. And it just got worse, and I was like, what is going on with this thing? Did I break it, or what happened? And it wasn't too many days like that that suddenly there were red streaks going out from that sore. Well, you know what it was. It was infected. You couldn't see it on the outside, but it was sure causing pain. And I had to get on some antibiotic, and that took care of it. And you know, that's how these wounds work in our lives. If we don't take care of them properly, wounds need to heal from the inside out. And if they don't, it'll be just like my arm. It'll cause a lot of pain later in life and as we go through life. So what actually brought me to this subject was in my Bible reading a few weeks ago. Actually, I think it was only about a week and a half ago. I was reading through the book of 1 Kings. I came across a story that I did not remember was in the Bible about Hadad the Edomite. Anybody familiar with Hadad the Edomite? Okay? That's the way I was. I did not remember this story about Hadad. This was when it's found in 1 Kings chapter 11, and I'm going to just kind of tell you the story. Solomon, in all his glorious kingdom, but this was kind of after he was in it for a while, and his heart was being turned away from God through his wives. And God told him he was going to bring judgment. And it says that God stirred up an adversary through Hadad the Edomite. But then it goes ahead and gives a story of Hadad and what happened to him. So back in David's time, David and Joab had gone into Edom, and they had went in there and wiped out all the males, it says, in Edom. And they just went through and killed them. It says they were there for 6 months. And if you remember anything about Joab was kind of he didn't have a lot of mercy, and he was pretty quick to just knock somebody off. Well, that Joab was there. He just killed him. But Hadad was a young child, and Hadad and some of his father's servants escaped. They went to they made their way over to Egypt. And when they got to Egypt, they went to Pharaoh, and Pharaoh took a liking to Hadad. Hadad was just a little child, remember? But Pharaoh took him in, raised him up, and actually gave him, when he grew up, he gave him his wife's sister for a wife. So Hadad's wife was the queen's sister. And they had a child, they had a son, and he was raised up in Pharaoh's house. Says he grew up with Pharaoh's sons. And so there he was. There's Hadad. He's got a really, really nice life. He's living in royalty. He's living with Pharaoh in Egypt. But it says when he heard that David and Joab were dead, he went to Pharaoh and he said, "I want to go back to Israel." And Pharaoh said to him, he said, "Why do you want to go back to Israel? What do you lack here that you want to go back to Israel?" He said, "It doesn't matter. I want to go back to Israel." Now, it doesn't say here that he had revenge in his heart, but it's pretty obvious that he did, because he went back to Israel. The Bible doesn't give us a lot of details, but it says he went back and he caused a lot of mischief to the people of Israel. Now, it appears like, obviously reading between the lines just a bit, but it appears like that Hadad kept this in his heart, and there was revenge on his mind. He wanted to go back and get revenge. Someone needed to pay for what they had done to his country, to his men, to the men in his country, to his dad probably. Took him from home, carried him off. That would be hard to accept. That would be a really hard, and as a little child. So it didn't matter how nice his life was in Egypt. He wanted to go back and get revenge. And then I also came across another story. I'm giving you these stories all here at the beginning, and then we'll go on and look at some other things. Another story I came across a few months ago. Actually, I don't know for sure how long ago it was. I had to look it up again because I couldn't remember all the details. And I'll probably have to look over this just a bit as I go along. Up in Madison, South Dakota, one night, Carl Erickson walked up to a house of a former schoolmate. And these men hadn't seen each other in over 50 years, not since high school. Carl was 73 years old. He walked up to the house, knocked on the door. Norman Johnson came to the door, and Carl said, "Are you Norman Johnson?" They didn't even recognize each other anymore. And he said, "Yes." And Carl pulled out a gun, shot him in the face 2 times, and turned around and left. And Norman died. And the police obviously caught up with Carl the next day, and they arrested him. And they asked him, what was the reason? What was the connection? And Carl's answer was, "I wanted revenge for a high school prank that happened back in the 1950s. And it goes on to say what actually happened. According to Carl, obviously Norman's not around anymore, and so we don't know his story. But it appears like back in the 1950s, when these guys were in high school, in the locker room, they had, Norman, along with some other students, had humiliated Carl in some way, made him wear something on his head that humiliated him tremendously. And if you look at the news article here, gives a little bit of Carl's life for the next 50-some years. It says he was hard to get along with. He moved to Wyoming for a while. He was chronically depressed. He loved his dog more than people. He hated the children in his community. He complained and harassed the children in his neighborhood. Once even threatened to kill his younger brother. And you know, his dad and his brother were both attorneys. They had went and done well in life. But Carl had revenge on his mind all these years, and it just festered. It festered, and it grew as time went on, until he finally, at 73 years of age, goes and kills the man that he felt like had humiliated him. Let's just do a little comparison between Carl and Hadad. Look at the situations. Carl's situation was very minor. Why would you get so upset about you being humiliated in school? And yet those things affect us. Look at Hadad. He lost his dad. He lost his home. He lost all the men in his country there. And he lost his home. He was carried off into another country. You know, that looks a lot more major to us. The point is, it doesn't matter how big or small those wounds are. If we don't work through them properly, it's going to affect our lives. For us, one thing is sure. Hurts will come. Wounds will happen. Life will be unfair. We can't get around that. It's what we do with those things that matters. Jesus says in Matthew 18, verse 7, "Woe unto the world because of offenses, for it must needs be that offenses will come. But woe to that man by whom the offense cometh." So, you know, Jesus himself says offenses will come. And that word offenses in some translations actually translated into temptation. And, you know, those hurts, those offenses that do come are temptations for us. They are a temptation for us to sin. But it also says, woe to that man by whom the offense cometh. So I think we need to be careful how we treat other people. I think it's important that we do. But the fact is, we won't always get it right. And sometimes, intentionally or unintentionally, people will be hurt. We will be hurt. And along with that, I'd like to just say, parents, as much as we want to protect our children, it is valuable for us to teach them at a young age that life will be unfair, that life will not always be equal. There will be hurts. And you know, we have opportunities to do that at a pretty young age, because those kinds of things happen. So, I'd like to just look now at our response to pain and hurts. Let's turn over to, Ken, turn there if you want. Hebrews chapter 12, familiar verses there, but I think they're important verses. And I think this should be one of our responses. Hebrews 12, verse 14 and 15, "Follow peace with all men and holiness, without which no man shall see the Lord, looking diligently, lest any man fail of the grace of God, lest any root of bitterness springing up trouble you, and thereby many be defiled." And one thing, as we look at that, these verses, says many be defiled. You know, one root of bitterness in our life can affect many people. And I think it's important for us to remember that. Our tendency, when there's hurt, when there's pain, is to harden our hearts to pain. And one thing that I want us to remember is that when we harden our hearts to pain, we also harden our hearts to other feelings and emotions. We cannot just shut down a part of our heart. We can't just harden our hearts to one thing, to the pain. When we harden our hearts to pain. We shut it down to other things, to where we can't feel love. We can't feel empathy and sympathy for others or from others. And how do we respond to wounds of the past? You know, I see many people. There are many people, I think, that are living life, trying to live life with wounds from the past holding them. Burdens, like Lauren mentioned this morning. Wounds from the past. The longer the wounds are there, the more they affect us. Remember, worsening over time. They worsen over time. I do want to acknowledge that some of these wounds can be very deep. Can be trauma. They may be very hurtful. Wounds affect our relationships, and we touched on that already. But many times, out of our woundedness, referring back to Carl, out of our woundedness, many times we push the people away that we actually want to be close to us. It's because of the hurt, and because we've shut our hearts down. We've hardened our hearts to pain. Wounds also affect the way we think about God. When we harden our hearts to pain, we also shut God out to a certain extent. God needs a soft heart to work with us, to speak to us. Some of you may recognize the drawing here on the board. I borrowed that from Ignite Marriage Retreat, and I did ask Brother Mark before I used that. But this was very powerful to me a few years ago. And I'd like to just go through that just a bit. And finding healing for those past hurts. How do we do that? Maybe it's such a part of our lives that we don't even know what to do. But I'd like to give just a few pointers along with going through this diagram just a bit. The first thing I think is so important, it is important, is that we're honest about what happened. Be honest about the wound, whatever it was. Name it. Be honest with ourselves about it. And maybe it's more than one. Be honest about those things. Name the wounds specifically. Maybe write it down. And then grieve the loss. And I think that's, you know, it's important that we push for forgiveness. So it's important that we do. But I'd like to go through this just a bit. So in grieving the loss, so over here on this side we have normal life. We're going along and we experience this pain, whatever it is. And you know, the first thing that happens, the initial stage, is shock, denial, and numbness. And as we go through that stage, and it's more than we can handle. And what oftentimes we want to do is short circuit across over here, and suddenly we're back over here going affirmation, maturity, and helping others. We try to do that without going through the grieving process of actually what happened. And one thing that I want us to remember, there's a number of emotions there, is that every emotion that gets buried, we don't go through this, we don't process it properly. Every emotion buried is buried alive. That's a statement I want you all to remember. Every emotion buried is buried alive. It will resurface at some point if we just stomp it, stuff it.
The searching and yearning stage, emotional outbursts, anger, confusion, why questions, angst, loneliness, anxiety, and shame. You know, I think it's important for us to go through all those things and process it in a proper way. And then we come to the bottom, just the sorrow of it. And the loss. It's important that we grieve the loss so we can go on. And then we come to the other side. And then it's forgiveness. And then it's letting go. It's acceptance. It's okay. And we release it. And then we come back up, and there's hope, affirmation, maturity. It's important that we follow that process. Remember, those wounds can be deep, and maybe it's something like humiliation in school. Maybe we look at that and we say, well, it shouldn't affect me that much. But sometimes it does. I'd like to go on. Invite Jesus into your wound, into whatever it is that has hurt you. Invite Jesus into that wound and allow the Lord to love you. You know, that's so important, I think, for people that have experienced trauma and deep hurts, is that oftentimes we question the love of God. Allow the Lord to love you. Let's look at Psalm 139 and look at what God, at how God keeps his eye on us and has been a part of our lives from the womb. Psalm 139, verse 13 through 16. For thou hast possessed my reins, thou hast covered me in my mother's womb. I will praise thee, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Marvelous are thy works, and that my soul knoweth right well. My substance was not hid from thee when I was made in secret and curiously wrought in the lowest parts of the earth. Thine eyes did see my substance, yet being unperfect. And in thy book all my members were written, which in continuance are fashioned, when as yet there was none of them. Stop there. You know, God created you, and God has had his eye on you from conception. Even before that, God knew that you would be born. And God created all of us for a specific purpose. God created you for a specific purpose. And he knew that purpose before you were born. God knows us. God knows our hearts. His love for us has always been there. And it always will be. You know, Jesus longs to heal our wounds. Jesus longs to be there with us if we will let him. I like to look at the work of the cross. Look at Jesus and what he experienced. You know, there's no one that has experienced more or that can relate to us better than Jesus himself. Isaiah 53. Verse 3 to 7. He is despised and rejected of men, a man of sorrows and acquainted with grief. And we hid, as it were, our faces from him. He was despised, and we esteemed him not. Surely he hath borne our griefs and carried our sorrows. Yet we did esteem him stricken, smitten of God, and afflicted. But he was wounded for our transgressions. He was bruised for our iniquities. The chastisement of our peace was upon him. And with his stripes we are healed. All we, like sheep, have gone astray. We have turned every one to his own way. The Lord hath laid on him the iniquity of us all. He was oppressed and he was afflicted, yet he opened not his mouth. He is brought as a lamb to the slaughter, and as sheep before her shearers is dumb. So openeth he not his mouth. We'll stop there. You know, Jesus died. He experienced rejection. He experienced all those things that you have ever experienced. Cruelty. Despised. Jesus experienced more than what most of us will ever face. Jesus died. You know, we've heard that Jesus died for our own sins. We know that. That's a part of our lives. But you know, Jesus has also died and took upon him the sins that were done against us. Though life has been unfair, though the sins may have been committed against us, Jesus died for those sins as well. Again, invite Jesus into that wound, those hurts, and you will find healing. Hebrews 4, verse 15 and 16. Again, talking about Jesus. Start in verse 14. Seeing then that we have a great high priest that is passed into the heavens, Jesus, the Son of God, let us hold fast our profession. For we have not an high priest which cannot be touched with the feeling of our infirmities, but was in all points tempted like as we are, yet without sin. Let us therefore come boldly unto the throne of grace, that we may obtain mercy and find grace to help in time of need. Again, Jesus has experienced those things. Jesus knows. He can relate to your pain in a way that you probably may not even realize. Jesus can relate to it very well. He knows those feelings. He knows the rejection. And yet, he tells us as humans, we can come boldly to his throne of grace. And there's no shame. There's no rejection when we come to Christ. For a few closing verses, I'd like to look at Joseph, and I think Murray referred to Joseph a bit. I thought of Joseph a lot as I went studied for this. We're just going to read the last part. Genesis chapter 45. A few verses there. This was right after Joseph had made himself known to his brothers. We know the story of Joseph, all the things that he faced. He faced rejection from his brothers. He was sold into Egypt. When he tried to do right, he was mistaken. He was misunderstood. He was put into prison. He was forgotten about. So many things that Joseph went through. And you know, it was because if Joseph would had, he could look back and say, that was all because of my brothers. If it hadn't been for them, I wouldn't have had to experience all this stuff. But look what he tells his brothers. Joseph is now the ruler in Egypt. In Genesis 45, verse 7. And God sent me before you to preserve you a posterity in the earth and to save your lives by a great deliverance. So now it was not you that sent me hither, but God. And he hath made me a father to Pharaoh, Lord of all his house, and a ruler throughout all the land of Egypt. Look what Joseph says. He said, it wasn't you that sent me here. It was God. It was God. Genesis 50. A few pages over. Verses 19 to 21. This was after Jacob had died. And his brothers came to him and they were concerned that Joseph was going to retaliate. But this is what Joseph told to them, or said to them. And Joseph said unto them, fear not, for am I in the place of God? But as for you, you thought it evil against me, but God meant it unto good, to bring it to pass, as it is this day, to save much people alive. Now therefore fear ye not, I will nourish you and your little ones. And he comforted them and spake kindly unto them. What made the difference for Joseph? What made him... How did he recognize that it was God? I think it was because he recognized God's direction in his life. And you know, God doesn't waste the pain that we face. God doesn't waste those hard times. If we respond, if we can find healing, God can use us. God can use that to actually further his kingdom. You know, it's no shame to ask others for help. And some of those deep hurts, those deep needs, we may need to go to someone else and ask for help. And find someone to help us through those things. To go through this process, it's necessary that we do that. There's no shame in asking for that help. So what will we be? What will you be? Will you be a Hey Dad? Will you be a Carl Erickson? Or will you be a Joseph that finds healing, that finds forgiveness, and recognizes that the pain can be used for the glory of God? Thank you for listening. Let's kneel for prayer.